Welcome, I'm Christian Corley, and with me are James McLean and Gareth Kavanagh, and we are here to talk about the Doctor Who 2019 episode, Resolution, Not of the Daleks. Chaps, how are you?
Yeah, solid.
Solid, says James. And Gareth?
Oh, good. You know, I feel we've already done this before we got on air. Went to Blackpool, had pine chips. James appears to think my choice of chip shop is dicey. I say, try the chicken and mushroom pie, make your own mind up. But yes, a fine time.
Good. I noticed there's a lot of chat about Resolution and online, and I've had a few chats offline about it, and I think Mixed probably covers it most adequately. So it'll be interesting to find out how the three of us, because we haven't talked about this.
But I think Mixed is understates it, because I was surprised to find that the sort of people who I thought would really hate it seem to actually really like it. The ones who I would have thought have said this isn't Doctor Who were the ones who were sort of saying, looking through social media, were the ones saying, this feels like Doctor Who to me. This is far better than the season. And I agree, it's definitely mixed, but I was not expecting the certain quarters to be liking it and other quarters. Do you see what I mean? It was just a very unsurprising feedback for me.
Okay. Did either of you watch it live?
Yes.
You watched it live?
Yeah, I watched it live.
Both watched it live. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't watch it live. So, So did you go straight online afterwards and see the reaction?
I was just flicking through Twitter, and I was expecting there to be a lot more hate for it than there was. And while there was obviously hate for it, but you're kind of used to that now, there was a lot of people who really, really liked it. And I was genuinely surprised that it had the like from those sort of quarters.
Okay. And which category would you come in?
I thought it was interesting. There was bits of it I really didn't think worked, and there were bits I thought were genuinely quite enjoyable. I felt that it was like all this series. I really felt the old school classic series in there a lot more than classic fans who seem to be ardently against it seem to see, which is what I find really bizarre. That story, I could cut that into almost four parts and shove that in either the 1970s or 1980s. And it probably wouldn't track that differently. It felt that sort of story. It felt a little uneven, but then those stories did. There was stuff in there which I thought was mistakes. I thought that the opening was too long, given that what it talked about had barely no relevance to the story, which again felt like old school Doctor Who. You know, splitting this Dalek up into three parts seemed almost like a waste of time story-wise, because it had no relevance to the rest of it. The conversation between the two about the New Year's Christmas kiss felt very mundane and dull, and I kind of thought they could have done that in a more either short or more interesting way. It just felt meandered. And I thought I liked the dad talk that was with the microwave. I thought that was fine, but it felt an odd place to put it. It felt out of pace with what was going on. And the final thing is, I didn't like the rather sort of 50-year-old writer commentary on families not talking at Christmas because they've all got Wi-Fi. That just felt, I mean, it felt like a callback to something that might happen in Russell T. Davis's era. But now it just felt a bit old hat and twee. You know, 15 years later, that comment's a bit, do we need it? But the rest of it, I thought was quite good. I thought it was quite well. I thought it was fun. I thought it was different. I thought it felt a bit like the old. I thought she felt very confident in it, Whittaker. The cast has stuff to do. Yeah, I had no problems with it. So that's sort of where I was. There's issues in there, but I thought it was still fairly good.
Okay. What about you, Gareth?
Oh, well, I think James is onto something that this could have been a very old school story. In fact, I could imagine this sort of almost fitting in a different version in every era.
Yeah.
I could see it being a Russell era one where basically, you know, you'd have done the kiss and then the Dalek appearing in the cellar in the in that really nice tight pre-credits teaser. That would
yes.
have really done that job, and then you'd have probably then had 10 minutes of talking about something else before the action started. So, and I could definitely see it being a sort of, you know, one of those almost sort of Hinchcliffe stories, almost like Pyramids of Mars. That would have worked in the same way as well. I could see that. Yeah, so I thought it was okay. I didn't think it particularly moved me in any sort of huge way. A sort of, you know, there was nothing particularly new and exciting about it, but I did quite enjoy it. It sort of, I enjoyed it more than most of the Christmas ones because it was freed from this awful sort of great big huge boulder it had to drag around. Like, oh, we've got to keep reminding people it's Christmas every 5 minutes. So there was. There was, I think there was like one reference to it being New Year, which actually you didn't need either. And it just did its thing. So it was comfortable, competent. I didn't mind the line with the kids either, actually. I thought that was a nice, just almost Marvel-esque kind of beat. That's that was more Marvel film where you suddenly get a sort of amusing segue and then you're into the action again. So I was okay with that. Yeah, I think it was okay. It was solid. It was fun. It did something different with the Daleks for a change, which yes. I think was nice. It reminded me of, funny enough, one of... Remember when the series first came back with Russell? There were all these marvellous rumours about what was coming in and what we were going to get. And some of them turned out to be completely, completely fatuous. But my favourite ones... You know, I don't know if you... Did you ever hear the one about how the Doctor was going to find the last 30 Time Lords trapped at somewhere and all their TARDISes were dead, but then he finds out they're all fascists, so he has to kill them all. I kind of, you know, a bit like the Pegasus in Galactica. I remember I quite liked that rumor. Completely wrong, but nice rumor. But the other one was about a Dalek that they find they find the Dalek on a freighter in deep space, and it's just the shell. The shell's dead, but the creature isn't in the shell. The creature's somewhere else, and it's murdering its way through the freighter like aliens to try and get back to the shell. And I thought that was really interesting. I remember asking Rob Shearman about that. And he went, nope, completely wrong. I wish I'd thought of that. That's a nice idea. But nope, it was never there. So I think to do something new with the creature like that was pretty good. I think the dialogue was a bit different for the Dalek. So it felt, I think the Dalek bits were handled nicely.
Yeah.
It's just a shame it's on its own as a piece, because I could imagine that now teeing up a bigger return for the Daleks. If we then had a series on at Easter, but as it is, it's an interesting little cutaway.
To me, it's still a reminder that Doctor Who in the current television format works really well at 45, 50 minutes. If you take 10 minutes out of that episode, the bits that would be trimmed are the bits which I think felt unneeded in that story. And it would have been a tighter, you wouldn't have had this long, awkward conversation about a kiss that no one cared about. You'd probably done it the Russell T Davis way and probably sort of thrown flashbacks to a party and sort of played and just made a little more dynamic, a little quicker. So you got the idea where they were, then you moved on. And there was just things like that in there, which I could see because I was with my family. I could see my mother moving towards her phone. And I was thinking, what are you doing? This isn't, pull this out. Go back to what is interesting.
Actually, you're right there. What it did have was, apart from that scene, was oodles of pace and urgency and peril. You know, when the girl kills the coppers, puts on the copper's uniform, which instantly gives her that corrupted authority, it was really good and actually quite dynamic and interesting. And so that was you're right, those it needed just to have the confidence to just be pace, which by the large it was.
I agree with that.
What about you, Patron? What do you think?
Well, do you know what? I think we've had it now, haven't we? We've had the series. So, and I'm going to be talking about the series in depth with James Baldock and hopefully Simon Dane's next podcast. But this feels, it just says, I'm looking at it and I'm looking at everything else that's gone before, and it just seems like it's all over the place. It's all at sea. I mean, this episode has everything. The full spectrum of from brilliant to absolutely atrocious. You've got the awful segment at the beginning, which not only was it pointless in the context of the episode, it would have made a great story on its own. Although how a bunch of people from the past would have killed a Dalek and then chopped it up and maybe thinking chopping up and sticking it in the three corners of the world, whatever, instead of, I don't know, burning it or dropping it down a volcano would have been a better option. I don't know. But you've got this whole, it's tonally, it's bonkers.
Well, hang on. The Egyptians had a good crack at doing that in the Dalek Master Plan.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of dead Daleks kind of entombed and in bits all over the shop.
All right, I'll go with that. But, you know, the whole voiceover section was hackneyed and just, what's going on? Get on with it. You've got the awful, what was that captioning? It's not 1995, is it? Jesus Christ. That was just, made my eyes burn. It was horrendous. So there's that.
How did it offend you? Was it? Come on, you've got to talk through that. You can't just go, I'm offended by your captioning. Give us a bit more.
Doctor Who has been like strong and positive. And, you know, elsewhere in this episode, brilliant visuals. I love the redesign, or the temporary design Dalek. I love the direction again, the long shots, the establishing shots, all beautifully cinematographed. To then throw those captions, that very flat, white, distracting captioning over the top of it. It just felt irrelevant and unneeded. And that whole section could have been completely dropped, like James said. And it could have been easily have quickly and effortlessly been referred to. And indeed it was with later on. So only just a tiny bit more detail to refer to that. You could have lost that entirely. As James said, this could have been a shorter episode. The section between Ryan and his dad, you know, it's been played, you know, it's been foreshadowed throughout the series. Not only was it dull, you got two essentially dull characters talking about dull stuff in a dull setting on the, with a microwave, one of the dullest pieces of household equipment.
Oh, you heartless pig. I thought that was quite good.
No, it wasn't. Stuff. No, it
gave
wasn't.
Bradley, it sort of cements Bradley as the reasonable man, though, you see.
Well, we already know he is. We already know that. That's, we're not learning
nice
anything
to be reminded yet about his reasonableness.
Nah,
you know?
it wasn't good. Coming back to the captions,
just quickly, though. I wonder, the boldest use of captions all year has been in Russell's last drama. What was it called? The one with Hugh Grant.
Too
early for my brain to work. And that was all big, bold, bam, wham, wham, captions. And I wonder if everyone went, oh, that's exciting. And it was riffing off that, you know, because TV is a smallish audience. It's a smallish
industry. Just imagine how big those captions are on a 52-inch screen.
That they make, you know?
Just imagine how big them captions look on a 52-inch screen.
Oh, nice.
it's not good.
Listen, I'm struggling to read my mobile phone nowadays. I feel I need very focus. So, you know, I was kind of okay with all that. Yeah.
Dalek stuff. I love the Dalek stuff. As you've already said, the Dalek outside its shell is very good. The redesigned, temporary design Dalek, the 18 things do my tits in. I'm getting sick.
Oh, where you go off into into a shed and design something. Well,
yeah, I'm getting a bit sick of that. Twice in one series, taking a piss. That feels lazy. That feels lazy, though. You know, is this amusing shorthand for something? Oh, what a reference to a 35-year-old TV show. Everyone will love this. No, come on. Twice in one series, get over yourself. No, good.
Yeah, and let's be honest, we all know that Chibnall wasn't watching it anyway because he was watching Doctor Who and moaning about it.
Yeah, he's only found out Men in Motors a couple of months ago, hasn't he? Wi-Fi family, not amusing. Sorry, go away, Wi-Fi family. Done typeface, done Ryan, Dad. The problem with this episode, right, it's New Year's Day. We always heard...
Bloody hell, Patron, someone's given your cage a good poke over this, haven't they?
We always heard during the previous eras... that the Christmas episode has certain things to do, mention Christmas, and doesn't need to be too involved because, you know, it's Christmas and everyone's like full on the turkey and the Christmas pudding, blah, 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 blah. Well, on New Year's Day, people have drunk too much. If we're going to generalize, people have drunk too much the night before and they want something that they can engage with that's going to keep their attention. Long conversations with a character's newly introduced dad does not facilitate that. This had sections that absolutely spoiled the episode. Those conversations about the kissing the party before, the guy with his boyfriend, who a lot of people are getting annoyed about, And I'd like to say this. If that character was straight and had to refer to his girlfriend, it's fine. If not, then no one needs to know about this person's personal life. They just need to get on and tell the story instead of sticking the distracting stuff in there. Because if it's distracting and it's making you think about this isn't the story, then it's not doing the job of telling the story. That's what the story's for.
I'm not sure I get... I mean, is this the guy who said that he was... The guy, this place where the Dalek stuff was?
Yeah, the guy who's got the handy hand.
A lot of people complain that he didn't need to be gay. Well, that doesn't matter whether he needed to be gay or not. That's not the point.
But the point is, surely, I mean, I mean, Russell D. Davis did that like virtually every other episode. There would be someone mentioned. And I'm not saying there weren't people who were against that at the time or had issues, but it didn't stand out to me because it seems almost part and parcel of what the show's been doing.
Exactly. So it's got to be the writing is at fault at this particular stage. At least we didn't get a terrible pun like,
can you give me a hand or, you know, I'm looking for a hand with this or, you know, at least we didn't
well,
get
well, I don't know. That. Might liven things up a bit.
I mean, I didn't mind that. I mean, part of me was like, oh, God, you know, who just has a hand sensor these days? Because that seems to be the way around any sort of key. Yeah, you know, it's better than a key. But then I kind of thought, well, OK, the whole point was the guy was only fairly stupid and actually admitted stuff that he didn't need to admit, which gave the person. I don't know. To me, it wasn't the writing per se. To me, it was the editing. There was just I kind of get the feeling that there's this sort of natural flow to writing this for Doctor Who, which is about 45 minutes, 50 tops. And as soon as any of these writers, whether it's Davis, Moffat or anyone do these final long episodes, because it tends to be one of the showrunners, they seem to sort of struggle to find that extra reason to have another 10 minutes. And I kind of feel these scenes sort of either feel too long because they've not had someone edit them and go, right, can we make this choppy and move on? It's almost like we've got this extra bit to fill. Maybe we can let this breathe more. And
everyone has a technique for that. You spoke to Hinchcliffe in the summer and he, you know, he used to create a challenge for his guys because he found TARDIS scenes boring. So whereas, you know, when Eric's at the helm and he's got 8 minutes to kill, well, you get a nice lengthy TARDIS scene, bosh, in there.
But this isn't happening here, because I still find most of the longer episodes feel like they need to be shorter. Yeah. So whatever they're trying to do in the new format doesn't seem to really, and it doesn't, and as I say, I think this is the same for Moffat, I think it's the same for Davis. Very few of them feel better, apart from Water of Mars, which felt like they still had bits they could have added in there to make that better that they pulled out.
Well, they've all got their tricks, haven't they? I mean, you know, I love The End of Time for lots and lots of reasons.
Yes,
but
so do I.
I also see it's full of padding. And I can see there are things that I love about that, which would be seen as indulgent and padded by others. By and large, I don't think this was too padded, actually. I think I honestly saw this as a pacey bit of Doctor Who and a pacey bit of telly. There was lots of things in there that he threw in that kept, you know, like when the army unit turns up and what a bit of luck with the old drone thing with Gatwick, eh? You know, I mean, that was fantastic timing. But I mean, they basically just turn up for a 4 minute action set piece that you really didn't need. But it was quite nice.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I think you needed to see the Dalek to see its extent of its power. I think it did have, if there was a necessity there, but I know what you mean in terms of narrative strand, it didn't have to be there. But I think the places where I think the pacing was poor here, it was particularly poor. But saying that, I agree with you. I mean, End of Time, obviously the scenes with Wilf and Tennant are wonderful and they're really enjoyable, but you've
lovely.
Got the scenes of I know you'll love this, but I found the scenes of Bernard and the OAPs looking for the Doctor, which was kind of relevant, too drawn out, and I felt I was bored. So it's nothing that Chibnall is doing which is horrendous that no one else is guilty of. I just kind of feel I'd love to see this being chopped up a bit and into a pacier 45-minute episode. And
well,
I think
you know,
it's a thing.
Yeah.
I was bored a few times. And just going back to the Ryan and his dad and any of the sort of elements of this episode that you would describe as soap, it's not well written. It's really awfully, terribly written. You'll get better drama from shows on CBeebies and CBBC than you'll get from these moments in this Doctor Who.
But I think
what
that
the hell is going on?
I think
seriously,
that,
there's a lack of competence in the writing here. This shouldn't be going out in this state.
I don't disagree. I
have to disagree. I'm with the learned friend. Yeah, you know, I thought it felt real. You know, when he talks about not going to his mother's funeral because if he turns up, then she's really dead, and it's cowardly, but it's understandable. That is, you know, that happens. That is a very real thing that happens. And
it's not working for me at all.
Well, I think that's the problem. I think the problem is it depends on whether you've connected to Ryan or not. If you've not connected to Ryan or not, I can understand why a 4.5 minute scene of two people talking about their engagement, which you don't find engaging, becomes very unengaging. If I quite like Ryan now, so having him sit, and I thought he played the scene well. So I quite enjoyed it, but I still felt it was too long for its position within the episode.
I think it's a huge part of Doctor Who's DNA now, these extended family emotional moments. And yeah, there were better examples. There were better examples. We all enjoyed Demons of the Punjab. No one was going, oh, this has no place in Doctor Who.
You know, 12 years? 14 years of this. This year, so maybe not. But you know what I'm saying? Since 2005, it's had this. Some people are much better.
Like some pox you've had for 14 years.
Some people 14 bloody are better years at writing this than others. And maybe it's just time to stop focusing on the companions' lives so much and start looking at the monsters in more interesting detail.
I mean, to be fair,
I know I've said this before. I've said
I don't disagree, and to be fair to this season, I don't think it's been that horrendous in that context, aside from Arachnids, which felt very forced.
Which I still haven't seen.
It's not been as bad as it has, but I do agree with you. I think it's a way to sort of try and explore characters which I don't think you need to have.
Come on. Let's be honest, though. We hate it when we learn more about the Doctor. Let's go with that. And the Doctor is a character that fundamentally we can't really change. We can move by little micromillimeters every now and again. We can occasionally have a tour de force like Heaven Sent. But even that in itself doesn't really tell us anything new about the Doctor. And whenever we get something new about the Doctor that we don't like, we ignore it anyway. So the companions is the only way that you can actually explore something at more emotional depth. And listen, you know me, I'd love to have every week to have, you know, Mr. Fibuli and Polyphase Avatrons and Pirate Captains and big fruity performances, but you know, now and again we get one and it's wonderful, but on the whole, you know, that ship has sailed now in terms of how television is.
But I don't think you need it. I think for this episode another problem, it suffers from the same thing as Xmas. There is a mandate that it's got to have something to do with New Year, and I think Chibnall's way of doing that was to say, we're looking at resolutions, so let's have a look at resolutions within the family, within this arc I've been running through the series of Ryan, and there's a resolution that sort of comes through this meeting with his dad on this day. Okay, I get that. I still don't think you need that. I don't think they need to be themed, but I don't feel that you need families, because the way I define these characters is not through his father. I don't define Graham through his loss of his wife, which obviously is a key thing. But to me, it's through his own motivations and how he works through the episodes, in the same way that Ian Chesterton works and the same way that Barbara works. And I kind of feel I'd like to see the show being a little more confident like that, because when this team works to me best is when they're allowed to sort of play as personalities within a story. And I can understand from a writer's point of view, sometimes you think maybe they seem a bit shallow. We need to bring in some of their background so we can understand these people more. I kind of feel that you don't always need to do that. And while I think there's times where it can be interesting, like in Punjab, I don't really feel that it's always, it's a necessity for the format. And maybe I agree it has become a format element, but maybe it shouldn't, because it has become a format element. So,
but then you end up with Clara, who we kind of get a sort of, this is kind of what your background is, but it's a bit sketched in and fairy tale-ish, and she just becomes a thing in the narrative.
But she did have a background. It was just fairy tale and silly.
it never felt
three
real
Claras.
Convincing.
Well, we had three Claras, didn't we? And one of them had a better background than the other two. Just going back to what you said, Gareth. I think you're wrong about this. Right, we have detective dramas, we have specialist dramas about villains. This is the age of this drama about villains. Doctor Who should be creating evil, horrendous villains and profiling them and watching the Doctor stop them. Not creating a 5-minute villain or a villain that's a box or a villain that's an accidental alien just going about its business. Proper bloody villains, proper profiles of portraits of evil, horrendous villains, whether they're classic villains or brand new creations. Put some effort into it. Tease the audience with that. Thrill the audience with that. Not endless soap sections that have been done to death by better writers in the past.
But again, to be fair to this season, they've done that more than other seasons, because you have had, I mean, people didn't particularly like him, but you did have an antagonist within Rosa. You've had the Tim Shaw, which has been in two of these episodes. The Dalek is a very specific villain as well.
Tim Shaw has classic Dalek, so Dalek doesn't count because it's classic. And you know,
but it
that's
was part,
that's part of the cost. Tim Shaw, a bit. Tim Shaw, yeah, but I'm not so sure. Rosa Guy, two-dimensional, so it doesn't
I know help. You didn't like them, but what I'm saying is that the setup for the stories has actually carried antagonists for them to work against more.
It needs to be digging down into that more. You know, the Punjab Islands, although as much as I enjoyed Punjab, I think probably my favourite episode of the series, the whole accidental alien aspect of it, you know, it's been done so many times, just so happens by Chibnall. But you know, I think the show's getting into a rut, you know. And it's too soon to be getting into a rut with a new cast and a new producer, new writers. But I do feel like it's getting into a rut now, and this shouldn't be happening at all. The theme to me, and I know you probably don't agree, but to me, there's a lack of confidence from the public. I don't think people, and this is partially due to scheduling as well, I can't see people just sort of like queuing up to go back to watch Doctor Who. I think there's a lack of competence from the production team as well that hasn't been there since the 80s.
I don't know. Well, obviously we disagree on that. I mean, I think there's tensions within fandoms to what it should be. I think they're always there, and I've been one of them, so you know that I'm certainly not pulling myself out of that. I think the show is doing fine. I think it's done a good revitalization. I do agree with you that I think there's things they still need to look at revising that should have been revised by now, as we've talked about. And as I've said, I personally find Arachnids is a very good example of that. But ultimately, while it's not been perfect, I've seen improvements as they've gone along. Whitaker seems to be in a position now where I get her character. She seems to be comfortable with it. A far cry from that first episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's these ridiculous things like the Rotten Tomatoes under 30% from fans, but to me that just shows that there is a question about politicization of algorithmic platforms, because in the end, audience share, averages for time slots, and audience ratings are fairly good for this season. I've been pretty much on the ball, so audiences are happy with it. The people who are not happy with it seem to be shouting quite loudly, and that's not you, Christian, you know, I'm talking sort of people who are trying to sort of go onto Rotten Tomatoes and give it as low as possible to make a statement, in the same way that was done for The Last Jedi. And those same people would probably say, well, you know, it's you know, it got less in the box office to The Force Awakens, so clearly we know we are right, it's worth this score. And you think, well, Empire Strikes Back got lower than Star Wars, but you don't see people saying that. There's a politicization here which is making very minor voices very loud, and I'm not saying fans' opinions are wrong at all. I'm saying that it's obviously subjective, and I think there are criticisms to be laid here, and I think you've made some of those valued criticisms. But what I do feel is that the fact that it's doing well in every other statistical area, and the one area it's not doing well is in places like Rotten Tomatoes, shows to me that those voices are amplified and are not actually indicative of what people are finding from this series. So I think they will be back. Whether fans will be back, or whether they will, like I did in the Moffat era, just keep watching and grumbling a bit until there's another change, probably more likely. But I don't think it's doing anything horrendously wrong. I still think this has been a far fresher series than we've seen in a long time. So Yeah, I think it's in a good move. I think it needs to make some changes still, but we have seen change, which we haven't seen in the last 4 years or so. Actual change. This, to me, feels like the classic show, far more like the classic show. Whether that's a good thing or not, maybe, who knows, but it feels like it's drawing from there and a little bit from Davis. But
I remain to be convinced, I'm afraid. Having, you know, my little boy's been watching Doctor Who, as I've said in previous podcasts, he's been watching Doctor Who from the beginning, and we've just done The Snowman and The Bells of St. John over the last couple of days, and clearly a different show 5 or 6 years ago, but there seems to be, he just knows what it is, and this show doesn't know what it is, I don't think. I think that's the difference. You know, it was winning awards back then, and now the only, you know, based on the New Year's Day episode, the only episode, only award it's going to win is for in the Lancet, for a new discovery in the cure against insomnia.
I think Punjab or Rosa would be ones that would probably be considered. I hope so.
But this is very interesting though, Gov, because, you know, we've just done, I think, 4 or 5 podcasts where we reviewed it, and we've generally enjoyed every week, and now we've had one that isn't to your taste, and suddenly everything slid off the table and it's terrible. I mean, was it really that bad on New Year's Day? I mean, we've pretty much enjoyed everything, and then now it's like, oh, it's terrible.
You know, that's what I'm asking myself. And, you know, this is partially because we're watching the older episodes as well. And, you know, we can say what we like about the past episodes, but and how they might affect our current feelings about things. I just, you know, there are good episodes in Series 11. It doesn't. I just feel it should be more of a cohesive whole than it has been, and perhaps this episode has maybe gone into James's oft used observation that you can have a bad beginning and a bad middle, but you can't have a bad ending. This felt like a bad ending to the series to me.
I'll tell you what, I did feel I didn't need it. I did feel the season had ended in good fettle, and I didn't need this little extra hang on. But no one ever wants to give up a slot and budget, so you have to do it. It didn't look cheap, which actually most of ones in recent years have looked very horribly cheap. Literally, we've spent all the money. What have we got in the cupboard? So it didn't look cheap. It did look okay. But as I say, I think if people out there had listened to the last 5 podcasts and seen that we'd all enjoyed it pretty much, and I think your ratings, Christian, were, I mean, the lowest might have been 8, and you went up to about a 9 or something like that.
I think my lowest rating of the series was probably 3.
Yes, it was fairly
early doors.
No, but I'm talking about the last 5.
In
terms of the last 5, I don't think you gave anything below a 7.
I think there's an interesting, there was an interesting tweet last week, which had someone had found 19 years ago, a DWM, which had various writers talking about how Doctor Who should return.
Oh, it's a very, very, very good issue, that. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you know, so Paul Cornell says, you know, it should be a season of one-off 50-minute stories is virtually the only way it could be sold now. I think there's a place for it at Sunday tea time, where the children's serials are, because that's the only place left for programmes aimed at older children. And interestingly, Moffat's was quite beautiful. Was the core elements are a police box, a frock coat, and cliffhangers. I chuck out gratuitous continuity because it's dull, and all that yawn-inducing Gallifrey rubbish with it. Ooh. I don't care where the Doctor came from or why he travels around the universe.
Oh, if only.
But I think it is aimed at older children now. I think it's aimed sort of more at teens than it ever has been. And
that's the core audience. Yeah. That's who it should be aimed at, you know?
I don't think it is. I think Christian's right. I don't think it probably is as accessible to the younger market as, say, Davis's was, you know, the sort of young child, sort of the 6, the 7-year-olds. Maybe it's lost that sort of touch, which Moffat's, I think, had lost a bit of as well.
No, but I was think both all over the place. I think with the Moff era, it was a thing of extremes. You either had dinosaurs on a spaceship, which is clearly this is for the 5-year-olds. But then you'd have Heaven Sent, which is actually for your sophisticated 30-plus viewer.
But he would always have, there was, I keep using this dull hack phrase, it was sort of far more high octane for every episode. The dialogue was very fast and clippy and accessible for kids as well, which probably gave it a little more of a draw for younger kids than this one, where
I don't know about that. You know, I haven't got kids, so I don't watch it with kids. But friends who watched it with kids during the Davis era and then the Moffat era turned up said, this isn't family viewing anymore. I seem to remember the one with all the upskirt jokes with Amy was the one where he said, well, you know, I think this is us out. So, you know, all of the River Song stuff, that's horribly convoluted, complex stuff. I'm not sure I could explain that.
It's very difficult to explain.
Try
explaining the Impossible Astronaut to anyone.
I don't think kids always go for that. It's not necessarily about the plot points. It's about the way the sort of dynamic dialogue, which is there in a sort of very Whedon way, which Davis was very keen on as well, where it's zappy, it's fun, the Doctor's crazy, and I don't think there's so much of that. I feel that the show's been pulled back a bit more this season, where it's a little more, and I prefer it personally, but maybe for kids, it's got that little less sort of punchy friendliness that both Moffat and Davis had. Interesting, Russell at that time, 19 years ago, thought it would only work best at weekends, weekday evenings at 8 o'clock.
On BBC Two.
So yeah. I think it's interesting how they sort of, these sort of predictions of where it would work and where it wouldn't.
It's a moving landscape. And yes. I think Sunday's a good place for it. All the big US shows go out on a Sunday. So this going out on a Sunday in the US is perfect. Sits with all those genre shows. It's a less pressured slot than Saturday. I think it's okay. I mean, it hasn't worked for me because I'm generally working on a Sunday, but I am not the audience.
Well, as I tweeted, Broadcast magazine said that the ratings were 500,000 down from the average Christmas slot, because obviously you don't have as many people watching on New Year's Day as you do at Christmas. The average for that slot on New Year's Day would be 4.2 million, and it got about 5.6 on the overnights, I think. So
it's okay. And actually, the Christmas one is skewed, let's be honest, because the Christmas one has in recent years had regenerations in there.
Yes, that's true.
Which are bigger events, sort of casual viewer event episodes, and just a standard, oh, look, we've landed on the planet Christmas again. So that will skew the average for sure.
And interesting that they didn't actually promote the Dalek, which was quite surprising, since Daleks still are a draw, even if some people say they're tired. You know very well.
I think that was a last minute thing to add in that Exterminate on the mix, because up until then it'd been total secrecy.
Yeah,
I think that's a wise decision, to be honest with you, because I think out of context that Dalek looks ridiculous, and I do feel that if it had been leaked or shared, if the BBC had published it out of context, I think it would have given them some negative press that they maybe didn't want.
But I don't think that negative press would have hit the viewers that they need. I think they'd shoved that on the front of the Radio Times, they might have had more chance. They'd probably have more sort of casual viewers tune in to see a crazy funny Dalek. You'd have the Twitter probably alight, as you say, with angry people, as there was with the console room. But I think the average person, and that's what I mean, I'm surprised. I think it's interesting that sort of strategic choice to make, that they kept that back, when normally that would have been something which would have sat on your Radio Times. Well, maybe not, because it would have been the Christmas edition, but you know what I mean? It would have had that punched.
Isn't Twitter permanently alight with angry people?
No, it is. Yes, that is true.
Let's hit Facebook. Jeff Waddell, absolutely tremendous. Chibnall's best writing by far and Jodie's best performance. Katie Poole, I couldn't tell that Chibbers had written it. Enjoyed various aspects, unit being taken down by pen pushers, the hacked Dalek armor, the body snatching, and most of all, the world was saved by a toaster oven. Guy Grist, it was all right, I guess. Bored by it, not as good as the second half of the series, but not bad. Chuck Behane, it was good. Dalek as a human controlling parasite was refreshing, although the Doctor missing that initially was surprising. Still good, though, even if I agree with some criticisms. Andrew G. Dick, bit better than the rest of Series 11 and the best thing that Chibnall has written so far. The archaeologist couple were fun. Matthew Baggins Carpenter, A really exciting episode of Doctor Who. Haven't been able to say that in a while. Trevor Arthur, primary story was a really good Dalek tale. Downside was the week, though. The weekday afternoon drama standards of the sub-stories. Internet failure, family needed exterminating. Simon Disney said it didn't feel like Doctor Who. Liam Moore, meh. Rob Preston, a rewrite of 2005's Dalek. Alex Tai started promisingly, but the writers then conspired to kill my interest with EastEnders-style, deep and meaningful character exchanges.
it's not at all, not at all contradictory there. But yeah, go on.
Phil Vernon, I think it's maybe me just getting used to Chibnall's writing plotting, but it didn't bother me this time that Ryan's dad was walking around with a microwave in a box that may have well have said massive plot resolution on the side. So, yeah, mixed, as I said earlier, really.
I thought I was actually surprisingly positive compared to some of the other episodes.
Well, yeah, I tried to pick out. So that's.
I tell you what, we haven't discussed the big controversial point, which was axing UNIT, which I was kind of very happy with.
I like it, but I don't think it needed to be a discussion. I don't think it needed to be a gag.
I thought it was quite clever because, and without getting political at all, I thought it played to both sides of the political point it was making. You could either see it as it sort of saying, this is what happens when you sort of remove yourself from, a cooperative.
A pan-national thing.
And yet the other way you could say as well, this is us, Britain, going on it alone and this is how we fight. So however your angle was, I thought it sort of played quite well into both. So it didn't really, clever. It wasn't that partisan. So I thought that was quite clever. Quite glad not to have UNIT. They've not been very good.
UNIT are spent for, well, UNIT are difficult now, let's be honest, because post-Iraq and post all these things, you know, the military is a difficult thing to...
Post-Nick Courtney.
But Nick Courtney is like, he's sort of, he's the reasonable man, but UNIT starts out as the problem. Yeah, but you just end up with a collection of soldiers who are either evil or clueless or just there to do a hasty thing, which the Doctor then has to undo. I just didn't see that they were going to add anything. No one's really done anything interesting with UNIT since they came back at all.
No,
that I can think of.
And I may have said this before, but, Kate Stewart, no thanks. Don't get the love for Kate Stewart at all.
I was going to say that
I like Gemma Redgrave, but she doesn't do it for me in Doctor Who at all.
No, well, to me, I think it's a misunderstanding of what UNIT was about. And I think UNIT, again, as we've said this before on the podcast, was about the dynamic between almost like a small little family thing than the fact that it was a military force needed to protect from aliens. I mean, he could have gone to a load of teachers in a school with a headmaster led by Stewart, or he could have gone to, I don't know, a fire station with...
Yeah.
A fireman led by Stewart. It didn't matter. It was about that small little dynamic and a force could go out and fight. And I kind of think it would be nice to have UNIT back in that sort of sense, that it could be a place where the Doctor could go back to, land in the same point every occasion now and then in a series, and then deal with adventure with a few people that they know, which aren't TARDIS crew. That could be nice, but you need to have the dynamic there. And at the moment, UNIT essentially is, as you say, it's Kate and then anyone else, Owen and the nerd, which... Yeah. To me, isn't really a character anyway. And I think that is the problem. They need to establish a nice sort of set of characters which you can go and visit. I suppose a bit like the Paternoster gang, if you like them, that sort of thing. But I think that's the mistake with UNIT.
You're right, actually. The university setting that they did with Capaldi was that's the obvious place for the Doctor to go, a sort of collegiate, intellectual, interesting collection of people with no machine guns, because that's always a problem.
I liked it as well.
It's always kind of been a problem, even in the 70s, and to be fair, they start off acknowledging it, and then by the end, they're just a load of decent chaps, and right, okay, you get out there and kill it, and I'll work it out. It's I was quite glad to see the back of it. I hope we don't have them back. We don't need them.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Kate Lethbridge would have been better off as a police officer, actually. If Kate Lethbridge had been like head of the Met or something like that, that would have been far more useful for the Doctor.
Yeah.
Or a small special team.
Yeah.
That doesn't have the unit baggage, and if you need the unit baggage, you've got the name.
I think
you need to refer back to it.
I think the university would have been a nice place, because, I mean, you can use university as a place where you have people researching, could be people, it gives them a place where you can find information, it could give it, you know, events or stories could circulate through that research, but it doesn't have the guns, it doesn't have the manpower, but it just becomes a nice base which he occasionally visits, and it gives you a localization on Earth, which I know goes into my agenda of not wanting it to be about companions' families, but it gives you a place where you can go and root it on Earth without it being about, you know, the companion family.
It gives us semi-regulars, doesn't it? It gives us semi-regulars that we can tap into who are off doing their own thing. While, I mean, what is Big Finish going to do in 10 years' time? We have to think Big Finish. You know, we need the University of Sheffield to have a big extraterrestrial department that they're all in. It'll happen, I'm sure.
But there are like thousands of years that Tim Shaw was on that planet, so they could do like the Tim Shaw adventures. There must have been exciting things that happened to him as a character. Make him an anti-hero.
Oh yes, yeah. Or the time traveling idiot from Rosa.
Yes. Well, there you go. Where's he gone to? What exciting japes is he up to now?
Good stuff. Anyway, Patron. Sorry, I interjected.
No, indeed.
A big vote, I think.
Yes. So. We approach a largely 12-month period with no new Doctor Who. And so that is necessitating some changes with the podcast with a K. So basically, this is what's happening. Roughly along these lines, we're going to be doing a main podcast monthly in which the three of us will discuss a topic, or maybe we'll watch something and discuss it as we're watching it, that kind of thing. Or maybe we'll get an interview. But, you know, generally, we'll be doing a very solid conceptual podcast.
We'll come up with something special, won't we? Because we're
doing one. Absolutely. If anything transpires that needs to be discussed relatively quickly or promptly, then I'll be doing a podcast with James Baldock and possibly Simon Daines. So, you know, there's no change. We're still going to be there to listen to. It's just we're going to be a bit less frequent, depending on what's going on in the Doctor Who world. However, we do have a move in hosting on the cards. Now, if you're listening to us on iTunes, this should not affect you at all. Because, you know, you should still be able to subscribe to us and listen to us through your normal subscription. If you listen to us on Audio Boom, we may not be on Audio Boom any longer, but all the other places we will still be available there. But you may need to resubscribe, so do keep an eye out. That's going to help us with hosting. It's going to help me with a bit of money as well, because hosting is free. And also, better still, it means we'll be able to do some... We've got the potential to do more interesting podcasts, basically direct from mobile devices, because due to integration, stuff that you don't need to worry about. So there is some new hosting coming up that may disrupt your feed. So just keep an eye on things. Make sure that you are subscribed to us and that you are getting new episodes throughout 2019, because that's what year it is. 19.
Wow. Oh,
we are living in the future, gentlemen.
We are. 40 years since that marvellous Horns of Nymon went out. See, I always have to get it into everyone.
It would be, I mean, it's a shame that we know the show so well, because it would be lovely to take a script that wasn't published, wasn't produced then, and produce it now, and see whether people would actually hate it, or whether they would gravitate to it, or whether it would function, or I don't know, or even taking a script and openly sort of saying this was then, and we do. I mean, we've seen it. We've done obviously on Big Finish and the like with Sharda and the like. So I don't know. I do sometimes wonder how much the aesthetics of a show confuse is the wrong word. Make it difficult to sort of see the differences between eras, and this has always been the case. You know, the golden era now.
The inherent cheapness is a barrier to the stuff behind it.
Yeah, I don't know. As I've said before, I'm just...
You kind of put the lie to that to a degree, although, I mean, they're rerunning on Twitch again now, aren't they?
And yes, they are.
Trolls. you know, a bit like where if you find somewhere marvellous on holiday that no one's been to, then you go back there 5 years' time and it's full of freaks. It's, you know, I think that's
And people trying to relive their wonderful last time they were in Benidorm. You get exactly. that. And they're all, you can see people in there screaming, London 1965, hoping that it'll somehow generate the same buzz as it did last year. And it doesn't because it's not last year.
No.
But
I think
yeah.
it's a shame they've rerun it, actually.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
They should have done something different with it. I don't know what, don't ask me, but there should have been something different they could have done with it. Focus on documentaries, for instance.
I suppose in the end, it's just running on the assumption that there's people who missed it last time round who might get into it this time. And
well, yeah.
Run them all. I mean, run the episodes backwards. Run them in reverse order.
Lovely. That would make great sense. I'm good with that. Oh, dear. Never mind. Well, so we'll only do this once a month. Oh, well, never mind. That's good. That'll give me a bit more extra time on a Monday morning.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, one month, wait, a month at least. Listen, are we going to throw a rating figure at Resolution as we did for the rest of the series? I'll kick off. I'm going to say 5 out of 10, and that's mainly for the Dalek bits.
Generous. I'd do that a 4, actually, going on them comments. Or possibly 3 when you went all Davos. So 5 is good.
Don't challenge him. He's giving it a 5. You'll only go down. What about you, Gareth?
I think it's probably a 6, actually.
Oh, that's surprisingly low. I thought given your comments, it would be higher.
I was... There were things in there I enjoyed, but I also think... There's nothing there that would make me want to revisit it. So it's a 6.
I think I could give it a 7. There's things I could probably revisit one more time. But I think something you said earlier about it just not feeling like it was needed. I know a lot of people didn't like the finale, but I really liked the finale of the series. To me, as Christian was saying, I think that is the one that, to me, made me think that was a good season. That ended well.
It was satisfying.
Yeah, and it was satisfying. It wasn't mind-blowing, but it was enjoyable. It flowed. It didn't feel like it was meandering. Well, this did have pacing issues, but it was still fairly enjoyable. I, as I said, if anyone wants to go out there and do a cut, do a nice edit of it, I would love to see that, because I'm sure that could be... If they did that on the DVD, which would probably be a bit of a slap in the face to Chibnall, but if there was like a sort of like a standard cut of it, I think that would be a really good episode. It was just a shame that they... As I say, that they had that little extra space, and in the end, I don't think they added more. They just let stuff clutter what was, you know, the
that's
pace,
true.
Which is a shame. Oh, well.
I tell you what, I did read somewhere online, which did make me think, is they said this is actually more like an episode of Torchwood.
Yes, I heard someone say that. There is some Torchwood itself.
See that as a, you know,
there's
chunks
a, yeah,
of a Dalek.
Few Torchwoods that start off with a big, big kind of possibly unneeded. Pre-credits.
You know, actually, there's one more thing which bugged me in this episode, and that was when, and I don't know why he did this, that he has the guy observe the TARDIS land, and then you have this really awkward thing, which is that he has to therefore sort of not be too bothered about it, because they're now looking at the where the squid's gone, and then they're out on top of the outside, and it just kind of feels like. I was thinking he's just seen something materialize out of thin air, and he's not really had the space to react in that in any sort of realistic way. And it was like, why did he have to see that? Why did that have to be seen? If you didn't have that scene and he just saw the box there, you could probably get away with him going, oh, I don't remember that box being there. What's happened? But then everything else is going on, pulls him along. But to actually see something appear out of nowhere. Just felt
I wonder,
like
I wonder if
much.
That has been skewed slightly by the cinematography and the framing in that scene. Because it is quite a striking arrival.
It is, yeah. And again, that's maybe the point. Maybe you've got to say for that moment, that's a quite exciting moment, you let that go. But I didn't really feel that it sort of felt justified, or it just felt like it made him seem less real, because he couldn't really sort of go, what the hell has happened? Yeah, there's something on this wall. No, forget the wall. What the hell just happened? but we got something. It's disappeared off the table. What just happened? Because that's where I felt he would be. And so early on in the episode, it made me sort of blink a couple of times. And other people have said the other problem is that, and it's not a problem, but the end resolution, everyone leaves happy, and now this girl is going to have to face police charges for potentially killing a police officer, stealing a car, killing another person. Yeah. It was funny that there was no wrap up to that. I mean, assumedly somehow the doctor made it all right, but you know what I mean? It was an odd open end to leave after you got this poor woman to do so many of these hideous things under the control of something that no one would believe. But
yes. Well, that's the eternal hole, isn't it? You know, after the doctor buggers off, what happens? Most of the time, not good things.
So we have to imagine that she is now in a cell, awaiting a trial, and everyone else leaves happily ever after.
Well,
oh, what a downer.
Sacrifices have to be made, Gareth.
This is true. This is true.
Indeed. So on that Happy New Year note, we will be back next time on the podcast with a K. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.